digestive problems are on the rise, and they are directly linked to our modern way of life. What makes life easier for us is ruining our bodies. Fast food, sitting at work, in the car, on the couch. The need for exercise is diminishing, and all of this is harming our tiny little housemates. After all, we are not alone in our bodies. The huge community of microorganisms in our guts keeps us healthy. And when things go wrong, we get sick. And not just a little. Disruptions to our microbiome could trigger morbid obesity, diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, and even depression and cancer. Lisa Osbelt-Block knows this. She's a researcher at the HZI and is fascinated by our little co-inhabitants. Our host, Julia Damon, talks to her about how our microbiome keeps our bodies healthy and what happens when it's out of whack. She also talks about her latest research into the microbiome and how it could be used to treat diseases.
I'm here in the library of the HZI in Braunschweig with microbiome researcher Lisa Osbelt-Block. Hi, Lisa. First of all, let's talk about some basics regarding our microbiome. So what exactly is the microbiome? Like, what does it consist of? Why is it important for us? And when do we get our first microbiome?
First of all, it's important to say we are not alone. So we are colonized by billions and billions of microorganisms throughout our whole body. So our skin, for example, but most importantly, the gut is densely colonized with various microorganisms. And this is not only bacteria. So we are focusing on bacteria here, specifically in our research group. But the microbiome is more than that. Also archaea or fungi, for example, protozoa, so very simple eukaryotic microorganisms are part of these complex ecosystems. And this is what the term microbiome actually means. So it's an ecosystem of various microorganisms, and also they are produced substrates, for example, building a kind of organ, actually. And this is very important for our health. So the microbiome helps us to digest food, which is otherwise indigestible. So the microorganisms split fiber into smaller particles, for example. They produce vitamins, vitamin B, vitamin K. They are important for the intestinal bowel movement. They are important to really get the energy out of the food. So the very basic digestible function is only possible with these microorganisms inside our bodies. And most importantly, these bacteria confer resistance against infections. What does that mean? It means that the bacteria inhabit the intestine and thereby block actually the space for external invaders, so-called pathogens, that can otherwise just grow out and infect us. So they are really, really important for our health. And on top of that, they are also in a close contact with our immune system. So they are training our immune system what is harmful, what is harmless, for example. So they are very basic mechanisms, but also a variety of mechanisms that are conferred by these microbes. And to answer the question whether it's already there from the beginning, it's not. It's developing over time. So we are born like completely sterile, but then get in contact during birth with the vaginal microbiome of the mother. And this is then the very initial colonization of the newborn. And on the other hand, if you are born via cesarean section, for example, the situation is a bit different and actually also unfavorable for our development. So we get in contact more with the skin microbiome of the mother and also with germs in the, let's say, general environment of the hospital. And this actually has long and lasting impact on the development of the microbiome. So starting from this very simple communities, the microbiome develops over time into more complex and complex communities, and those stabilize at the age of 3, so to say. So a 3-year-old has a comparable microbiome to an adult, but this is not, let's say, always fixed. It's really changing over time. There's different environmental factors that influence the microbiome composition. And this is how it goes.
Actually, which bacteria and viruses cause infections and which ones are beneficial for us or even help us to cure? And is it even possible to generalize this?
It's not really possible to generalize it, even though there is some basic principles I can elaborate on. So there are some bacteria that are for sure beneficial. These are called symbionts. There are ones that are, let's see, rather neutral. They do not harm us. Those are called commensals. There are some that are sometimes a little bit harmful under certain circumstances. Those are the protobionts, but they are part of the natural microbiome still. And then there's like external troublemakers, invaders that actually harm us and make us ill. And those are the pathogens. Overall, the community should consist, of course, of the more beneficial ones, or let's say the harmless ones rather than the potential harmful ones. And usually most of them are oxygen sensitive bacteria, so-called anaerobic bacteria. But the overall community structure is very, very individual. So you have a different microbiome than I have. And actually, it's more like a microbial fingerprint. It's really difficult to generally apply broad mechanisms that apply for everyone. It's rather personalized and very individual.
But even within myself or in one person, it's very diverse. Biodiversity in the microbiome is so important.
Diversity as also in the usual life is very important in that regard that microbes have different functions. If we just think of ourselves, we are not good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there is one person that has like favorite painting skills. There is another one who can like run very fast. There are really like generalists that can do everything but not very good. Then there are highly specialized people that are like really outstanding in one particular field. And this also applies to the bacteria. So it's rather a team sport. We need bacteria with different functionalities that can complement each other. And thereby, they really block efficiently all the available nutrients and spaces and create kind of a barrier that makes it difficult for external invaders to really find their space and establish in this community.
Wow, okay. And how does the microbiome react to prebiotics and probiotics that we actually eat?
So maybe to just give a brief definition of these both terms. So prebiotics are actually substances like fiber, for example, that actually favor the outgrowth of more beneficial bacteria. So we try to feed the good ones only. And probiotics are living bacteria, actually, that we try to apply directly to really supply the good ones that eventually then invade our body and establish there and gives us health benefits. But we have to say that probiotics in itself come maybe like from yogurt, something like this.
Yes.
And they can not really establish in our microbiome. So they only give like temporary benefits to us and in that regard during the intake, so to say.
So we have to eat it every day.
Exactly, on a regular basis. And for prebiotics, it's actually the case that there is actually clinical hints that constant supplementation, and also here it's the, important to like really continuously eat it, that you can really have impact on the better. A beneficial one and give them a fitness advantage over the bad ones. So I would say you can do it. It does not harm, but I doubt that all the marketing, let's say, effects that are promoted there are really
helpful. So I think I now can understand why this topic fascinates you, but how did you get into microbiome research? What actually fascinates you about it?
I think microbiome is one of the most exciting fields in basic research because nevertheless we have a lot of advanced techniques. We cannot really understand this immense complexity and unravel all the underlying mechanism, how the microbes talk to each other, why are ones important, why is another important under another circumstance. So it's really like immensely relatively complex, and this fascinates me because I also like to do some riddles and solve this. Mm-hmm. So this is why microbiome is really fascinating in itself, and also the fact that we are colonized by trillions of little tiny microorganisms that actually can change our health and actually can even change our feelings. This is a really exciting fact that actually microbes can influence our behavior. There are hints that depression is actually driven by changes in our microbiome, I think.
And what exactly are you currently researching?
So we are currently trying to understand which particular bacteria do confer colonization resistance, which means which are important to be protected against an infection. Because we have to imagine not every one of us gets infected. Just imagine sitting in a train where all the coughing people are around us. Mm-hmm. Some of us will get infected, the other not. And why is that? So to really understand which are the important ones. And then to understand if we have identified promising candidates, to understand how they interact with others, because the microbes are not really like sole players. They are team players. So they actually only confer the good properties if they are in close contact with a team, so mm-hmm. to speak. And yeah, to develop and advance this further to eventually get a microbiome-based therapy for certain type of diseases. That would be the overall goal.
And which model systems do you use or are you working with?
There are different model systems we are currently using. So we have very simplified models where we just use one good bacteria versus one bad bacteria, put them together in like a nutrient solution and see who wins, basically. Mm-hmm. Then we can scale it up to simple communities of like around 20 different microbes. We put them together into this nutrient solution again and see what happens over time if they grow. Who establishes first? Who is the fastest? What happens if we take out one bacterium or add another bacterium? How actually they are interacting? What we also do is that we really receive feces from healthy volunteers or also from diseased people and put in bacteria, which are, for example, antibiotic resistant or otherwise pathogenic, and see whether these bacteria can establish in the feces or whether they are inhibited or whether they can grow out very easily. And those microbiomes then that are protected are of particular interest. And those are then tested further in a more complex model system, which is a mouse. Because in the simplified systems, we have not the impact of the diet, we have not the immune system. And this is also very important because, as I just said, it's very complex very complex community that interacts with the host, and in this case, the human. But in a mouse, we have at least a whole organism to study. And there we use mice with, let's say, very simple communities. So they are bred with only 12 bacteria that represent the major bacteria that are, let's say, in a healthy mouse microbiome. And there we can then add particular candidate bacteria and see whether they really confer the resistance against an infectious pathogen. And one step further, what we also have, and what I think is pretty amazing, we have mice that are bred completely sterile, so they are void of any bacteria. And there we can like transfer the interesting, let's say, poop samples that we identified in the other screening assays and transfer them into the germ-free mice and then see how the microbiome established there in a mouse and what happens if we challenge then these humanized mice with a human pathogen, whether they are protected or not. And this helps us to really unravel the underlying mechanism.
How can the balance between the host and, for example, the mice or us humans and the microbiome, how can this be disturbed?
Yeah, I mean, this is a question where I cannot really give a simple solution. So there is tons of factors that can influence and also actually disturb this very, let's say, sensitive ecosystem. So imagine if you take an antibiotic. I think it's already kind of known that this antibiotic will not only kill the bad one, but it also has a massive impact on good ones, actually. And this really then leads to a shift of the community so that the good ones that actually should be the most microbes are then decreased and give then space for example, for pathogenic bacteria that they can outgrow and outcompete the good ones under these conditions. Beside antibiotics, also other type of medication can actually influence our microbiome. So actually 1/4, I think, of all non-antibiotic drugs have been demonstrated to actually have an impact on at least one species or one, let's say, type of bacteria in the gut. So there is really like massive changes due to the medications that you have to actually take on a daily basis, for example, painkillers. Beside of that, also our diet has a big influence. So in the modern, let's say, kind of industrialized world, we have a highly processed food, high sugar, high fat diets that actually are not good for our microbes. So there are ones that are starving, that really don't get the required food anymore. There are ones that really rely on fibers, for example. And if we do not feed them with fibers, they just die out. It's like mass extinction in our microbiome. Yeah, it's really bad. And also the hygienic conditions, for example, we just talked about the cesarean section babies, for example. But all of that will lead that our microbiomes are really less diverse in comparison to other populations of people that really live more in a rural kind of world, like in Africa, for example, or in South America. So, yeah. There's a lot of factors that can actually bring it out of balance.
Wow. And which role do commensal bacteria, you mentioned them before, play in microbial infections and in the interplay between host and microbiome?
So commensal bacteria kind of have like double role, I would say. So they, of course, produce some substances. So they have like different kind of metabolisms, and they produce different sort of substance that can then be utilized in turn by pathogens, and they then can grow out, for example. But I think the most important part is that they actually block niches that are otherwise taken by pathogens. Just one example, if you have this buffet, for example, and there is two pieces of cheese left, and we have a cheese-loving bacteria, it will go there and eat it all. I mean, they are not altruistic bacteria. I mean, they don't leave for the next one. And if they have just taken it all, the pathogens do not have any cheese to grow there. And this is why they can be wiped out and they cannot establish. So really this space competition is a very basic but important concept, how commensals actually compete with pathogenic bacteria.
Yes, very interesting. And regarding your research and the future, what new microbiota-associated therapies are potentially imaginable?
Maybe coming from the past, what is actually known for a very long time is that you can transfer a whole microbiome from a healthy person into a diseased person and cure, for example, diarrheal diseases. And this is actually done already in individualized healing attempts, also in Germany, where you just transfer the whole poop from a healthy donor into a diseased person and then can cure recurrent Clostridioides difficile infections. So you just have to imagine these people suffering from diarrhea over and over. They have to take antibiotics over and over and nothing is working because the microbiome is really like depleted, like completely out of balance. But then it's really like an organ transplant, mm-hmm. kind of say you put the whole microbiome into this diseased person, and in 80 to 90%, this person is cured and does not have problems anymore. And this concept, if you understand better which bacteria are actually the important ones, could be applied to various other diseases, for example, chronic inflammatory bowel disease, for example, maybe even diabetes, maybe even cancer. I mean, you could envision like tons of diseases that are associated with the microbiome if you just understand which bacteria are really the important ones and which mechanisms are maybe out of place in this diseased people. You can try to reestablish by refeeding specific bacteria with a specific functionality.
Do you think it's possible to maybe one time live without antibiotics?
Rather not. I have to disappoint you. I also would like to say that I'm not against antibiotics. Antibiotics are super important and will be super important to treat life-threatening infections. But we have to reduce antibiotics in that cases where they are not urgently required, for example, in farm animals. Or if you feel a little unwell, go to your physician and he just prescribes a broad spectrum antibiotic without even knowing whether you have a bacterial infection, but rather a viral infection, maybe, and then it's not even working. So there we have really room for improvements. But I have to say, in Germany, we are doing quite well. I would say in the clinics, there is like methods like antibiotic stewardship or screening of patients that you really diagnose which bacteria are colonizing a patient and then eventually lead to an infection to really have antibiotics in a more targeted way. But in other countries, there you can just get your antibiotics in a drugstore just without even a recept. So I think there is room for improvement still in these countries. But we won't have our lives without antibiotics, that for sure. So we still need them, but maybe we can try to reduce them and also counteract this rising problem of antibiotic resistances.
Okay, thank you. This was about research and before about the microbiome, the basics. So now let's talk about our daily life. Can you give us some like recommendations for maintaining a healthy microbiome based on current science?
I don't know. I told you that it's very individual, so it's difficult to really give general broad concepts. But what I can say, of course, is that you should eat healthy, so whole grain products, maybe fiber-rich diet. So really come back from this, let's say, fast food-driven kind of diet. Do not eat so much sweets, for example. Maybe eat like more fermented food. This is really good. And I mean, also yogurt. Yogurt is also good. But then also try to reduce stress maybe in your daily life. I know it's difficult. I mean, with your daily work-life balance. And then also like do exercises, not just sitting around and doing nothing. So in your free time, trying to have a nice walk in the outside area.
And how do you manage this to implant all this in your certainly stressful everyday research life?
I wouldn't say I'm a role model in that regard. So there's definitely room for improvement also on my side. I mean, I love sweets, for example, even though I know it's not good for my microbiome. But I think it always has to be in balance. I mean, you can eat also unhealthy one day, but the next day maybe try to eat more healthy, eat fruit, vegetable and whole grain products again. And also really I try to find space for other hobbies in my free time, which really counteract this thing at the PC behavior. So I go out for a ride, for example, I have horses, or I go running or swimming, and this really helps to keep your microbiome also in balance.
Thank you very much for all the information about our microbiome and especially for the insights into your research on this subject.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Lisa Osterblock is researching how our microbiome keeps us healthy, what disrupts the microbiome and what consequences this has for our health. And also how these findings can be used to better treat diseases in the future.